Welcome aboard. We will be your guides during this magical journey into the movies. It's the perfect job for us because we love the movies. It's showtime. Ready when you are, CB.
Action.
Welcome to Monoreal Radio, episode number 281. I'm Sean.
And I'm Jackie.
And we are here this week to review and discuss the Hannah Montana movie as it celebrates its 15th anniversary.
I'm going to take you back in time for a little bit.
Oh, please don't.
Do you remember the phenomenon around Hannah Montana? Because
yeah.
Miley was transitioning out of Hannah and into her own solo career around like 2008, 2009, when you and I had been working in radio.
Yeah.
And I remember so vividly, we worked at a local station on Long Island, and one of them was a top 40 format and the other was a classic rock format. So Hannah Montana was so big. We did this promotion where we were giving away concert tickets. We were with the top 40 station down at the concert that night. And then they also sent the classic rock station out, which they never did, handing out earplugs as a gag to the parents so that they didn't have to listen. It was really, really funny. But just the idea of doing a cross promotion was something that was unheard of. But that is how big Miley was. And really of her own accord at that point. Not just because of the show.
And they never did a cross promotion like that again at a concert.
No. Not the Jonas Brothers, not
anybody.
No.
But you know what I remember is being in college, and I had a friend that we had a couple of classes with, and he didn't come in one day, and I thought nothing of it. So I saw him the next day, and I said, hey, oh, you got whatever it is you had, you got over it pretty quick. Hope you're okay and not contagious. And he was like, well, no. I skipped school yesterday because I had to buy my sister Hannah Montana concert tickets.
Not to even go to the show. This was to purchase the tickets?
For his little sister.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a good brother.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he actually got them, but he tried really hard.
Well, all this is to say, though, that you and I were very much surrounded by the hype, and yet curiosity never really got the best of us to go and check out an episode, because up to this point, I have never seen not a one thing having to do with Hannah Montana. And I almost went and watched the pilot because I was very curious to see how the format of the TV show changed for the movie. And I was going to do it so we could maybe compare and contrast a little bit. And then I decided, no. I'm just going to let the movie stand on its own. So that's what you're getting today, listeners.
Yeah, I tried to watch the pilot.
Did you?
But I had an issue with my Disney Plus because I was trying to do it on my laptop. So like it played, but it didn't. So I also have not seen a single lick of Hannah Montana.
Okay, so you don't even have clarity, because this was something that I had tried to look up. I was curious as to when she revealed the secret to Lily, because obviously, as we're going to discuss in the movie, Lily already knows. And I had thought the series finale ended with Miley exposing the truth because Lily wanted her to go to college with her. And apparently that was not the case. And Lily's known the whole time. That was the pilot, I believe.
Yeah, the title of the pilot was Lily, I Have a Secret, or something to that effect. So I'm guessing they must have used the pilot as the jumping off point, and then hijinks ensued for the rest of the series run. But are we missing anything, having not seen an episode of this show? And is all of this worth the hype, or are we just too damn old at this point? That, on top of many other things, is what we are here to discuss today.
This episode is sponsored by Fierce Fox Co., designers of handmade silkscreen shirts. Fierce Fox has a t-shirt, tank top, hoodie, or crew neck for every fandom. So whether it's the movies or theme parks, princesses or villains, the MCU or Star Wars, everyone will find something they love. The designs range from subtle quotes from our favorite films to iconic characters we can wear proudly in so many different styles, such as sketchbook and concert tees. Listeners of Monoreal Radio can get a 20% discount using the code Monoreal at checkout. Visit fierceboxco.com to check out all of the collections.
Hannah, quote-unquote, and her best friend Lily are late for her own concert and have to sneak past security for her to start the show on time. After the show, Miley, as Hannah, shoots a music video. Following the shoot, a man sneaks into her dressing room, claiming to be wanting to meet her on behalf of his children. However, However, her publicist, Vita, exposes him as Oswald Granger, a tabloid journalist looking to expose Miley's secret. At school, Miley learns that she is filling in for Beyoncé at a music award show and leaves to buy Lily a gift for her sweet 16. She fights with Tyra Banks over a pair of shoes while Oswald records the entire thing. Miley arrives at Lily's party, still wearing her Hannah wig, causing a big commotion and upsetting Lily. Oswald asks Lily questions about Hannah, and she exposes that Hannah lives in Crowley Corners, Tennessee. Her father, Robbie, becomes upset as Hannah's fight with Tyra gets front page news. He is also upset with how Vita and Miley have become Hannah obsessed. Excuse me. I'm going to do this the whole damn time. When Miley gets off her private jet for New York at the award show, she is shocked to see that Robbie had the flight land in Crowley Corners instead. He tells her that he wants her to stay for 2 weeks for a Hannah detox. She reunites with her horse Blue Jean, as well as Travis, a childhood friend who previously had a crush on Miley. She attends her grandma Ruby's birthday, and her father makes her do chores and reconnect with her roots, while Ruby encourages Robbie to meet a newcomer named Lorelai. That night, Miley looks at an old photo of her and her mother and wonders why people keep saying that they miss the old Miley. The next day, Miley decides to start Operation Save Hannah Montana. She goes to a farmer's market with Ruby and learns that developers want to build over the farmland and add apartments and a mall. When Miley shows no interest in country life, Ruby scolds her and reminds her how lucky she is to have a home like Crowley Corners. Miley also sees that Oswald has arrived and is trying to find her. While in the barn later on, Travis hears Miley as she is writing and singing a new song, but he tells her that the song doesn't tell him anything about who she is and how she feels. They go back to horseback riding so Miley can see the natural beauty of the country, and they do chores around the farm. Miley helps hang banners for a fundraiser to protect Crowley Meadows from the developers. At the fundraiser concert, Miley sees how much Robbie likes Lorelai and encourages him to get closer to her. Miley and Travis, meanwhile, share a dance, and then Travis encourages Miley to take the stage after a spirited performance. Mr. Bradley, the mall's developer, shows up and tells them that they can't raise enough money to stop the project from happening. Travis announces that Miley knows Hannah Montana and that they can put on a show to raise money to save the Meadows. Lily arrives dressed as Hannah, and the two reconcile while Oswald continues to watch from a distance. Travis meets Hannah, who encourages him to ask out Miley. He does, and she agrees. However, she learns that she has a scheduling conflict after Lily, as Hannah, agrees to attend the mayor's welcome dinner. Miley tries to be in two places at once, bouncing back and forth between her date and the mayor's dinner. Eventually, both dinners are ruined, and a young autograph seeker sees that Miley and Hannah are one in the same, as does Travis, who tells her that they are done, as he believes that Miley was simply making fun of him the whole time. Robbie, trying to protect Miley's secret, ends things with Lorelai, who was embarrassed by Hannah's actions at the mayor's dinner. Robbie and Miley reconcile the next day, and Miley prepares for her concert to save Crowley Meadows. Travis sees that Miley finished painting the chicken coop that they had built together. At the show, Miley as Hannah sees Travis, Lorelai, and Robbie in the crowd. Feeling overwhelmed by the guilt she feels for having her family cover for her, she pulls off her wig and exposes that Miley is actually Hannah Montana. She performs her newest song, The Climb, and the entire town convinces her to keep her alter ego as they will collectively help keep her secret for her.
Sure.
Oswald, having taken photos of Miley, prepares to send the pictures to the press. However, after seeing that Vita flew his daughters in to see Hannah perform, he instead quits his job and keeps his daughters happy. Miley kisses Travis and finishes the show as Hannah Montana. Lots happening here. Lots happening here. Okay. We're going to rewind all the way back. All the way back to the opening scene of this film.
So here's the thing. I know that we talked about how we successfully avoided Hannah Montana for all of these years, but I don't want that to be mistaken for us hating all over it, because I actually think that this is a brilliant concept. You know, artists have been doing this for years, trying to conceal their real identity. And I think that, you know, social media has obviously thwarted all of that. But, you know, it's more common now for social media to be used as a tool so that you're seeing what the artists want you to see. And they're still projecting an image and trying to conceal their private life. So just conceptually, I think Hannah Montana is great. But I feel like this opening scene is sort of where it dates the film a little bit, because this would never, ever happen today. You know, I get that they were trying to go for this really zany open, and I think that it works in that regard. It works for story, reinforcing the idea of Miley's remaining anonymous. So I totally get it. But especially when we're thinking in terms of an artist having a hidden identity, there's still an entire team of people that are pushing you to get to that stage on time. So I don't buy for a second where her dad is the only one that's waiting on her in the dressing room. I mean, I get it. You're trying to pare it down so that the audience sees that there are only a very select few who do know the secret. But I feel like that sort of contradicts the idea, or contradicts the modern idea of the artist being something that is marketed and being sold essentially to the audience. Because if this were real, like if Hannah Montana were real, there would be so many more people on board the moneymaker that would want to protect the real identity and just put her out there and use her essentially. So that's the only thing where I feel like now it does sort of feel a little bit dated, but it works. I will turn my head the other way because it's working to set everything up here.
I'm willing to suspend a certain amount of reality because it's a movie, and it's a movie based on a television show, so they're at least sticking with their source material. Where this movie, and this whole thing is just backstage hijinks, because you had to have people laugh at Miley Cyrus driving a golf cart and having security guards trip and fall on the floor.
And driving through her own face. I get it, yeah.
Here's the thing, where I think people, a modern audience who does not remember when this movie came out, who was too young to remember what life was like, it was better, by the way, without certain social media and without certain tabloids up your butt all the time. You know, Hannah Montana, the TV show, started in 2006. So at the time of this recording, that's almost 20 years ago. You're talking about 15 years since the release of this film. People know TMZ now, and TMZ was around 15 years ago, but people don't realize that TMZ exploded the day that Michael Jackson died, because they broke the news before anybody else. This movie came out 2.5 months before the death of Michael Jackson. So TMZ was a thing, but they were not the TMZ that people know now. So you're right. You could have kind of pulled this off a little bit more 15 years ago than you could now. Now it couldn't happen at all. It couldn't happen at all nowadays. And people also don't remember, like, Kiss. We're going to take a great example. Kiss was very, very deliberate in not showing their faces in public. They wore the makeup. Nobody knew what a member of that band looked like until 1983. And they did it intentionally when they took the makeup off for the Lick It Up album. Prior to that, if they went out in public, they would have scarves over their faces. They would have books over their face. Like, they didn't want anybody to know what they looked like outside of the makeup. And they tried, the media tried hard to get them, and they could never get them. So, yeah, like, 15 years ago, easier to pull off than it was today. But the desire of exposing somebody's identity when they're a celebrity, that's been there for years.
Absolutely. But I think with Kiss, I mean, that's the whole gimmick, right? I mean, they did that to protect their identity, so it's like the public is going to want to know more. I think the best example really is Dolly Parton, because she's got the heavy makeup, she's got the wigs, and she has said that she did that intentionally so that she can go to the grocery store and nobody comes up to her and she can remain anonymous in the public. But I think that there's two ideas that we're trying to get at here, is that this is nothing new with trying to conceal your identity. Was it easier to do prior to social media? Yes, absolutely. But now I feel like things have almost come sort of full circle again, because the music industry, the entertainment industry as a whole, they are so in the business of making money. They don't necessarily care so much about protecting an artist's identity, you know, just out of the goodness of their hearts. All they care about is money. So if somebody does want to remain anonymous and have a huge career, they really don't care except for the bottom line. So I feel like now it's come full circle in that regard, because there's going to be an entire team of people rallying around this one person that is making them money, that they can exploit in that way. So I feel like even with social media, there are more, it's easier to expose, but there are more people that are willing and able to cover it up.
Well, because I think they're looking at artists and bands now as a brand.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas before, they were just artists. They are now a brand. They are a fully fledged company in and of themselves.
And I mean, that's it. The entertainment industry is a business when it comes right down to it. But yes, even in the span of the past 15 years, there's been a shift from backing an artist that you believe in that can make you money to having to be, to your point, a fully marketable entity by the time they make it to the public eye.
The one thing that I will not suspend reality for, though, is that in the first 5 minutes of this film, you see the worst security in the history of security.
Oh my God.
And I'm willing to overlook the zaniness at the arena. There is no reason why a middle-aged man should be able to sneak into the dressing room of a 16-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And not be noticed.
Yeah. This entire thing is truly uncomfortable, and I hate that there are no repercussions other than Miley's publicist giving him a slap on the wrist. He should have been completely ejected from the area with a restraining order slapped upon him. And especially that he's like a known tabloid writer too. It doesn't matter who you are though. Like he should have, this is punishable, and they shouldn't have leaned into the comedy of it. Like, because now it's just very uncomfortable to watch. But this is not a surprise from this entire debacle of a production of the music video that they're shooting, because yeah, my biggest issue is that, you know, the track that she's lip syncing to starts skipping. It's Best of Both Worlds. That's how they open the show, and they take you from the concert to her music video shoot, and it starts skipping, and the director calls cut, and he says, don't worry, they'll fix it in post. And I don't think that I have ever hated a character so much in my entire life.
They Milli Vanilli'd her.
Well, it's a music video.
Right.
Of course you're lip syncing. I don't care about that. I care about the production passing the buck to post. Not today.
You can't just fix everything in post.
No, you can't. Not today. Today is not that day to have the conversation.
But I feel like if you can fix anything in post, it's easier to do with a music video. I mean, you were already there. You're already paying for it. I don't know why they wouldn't just reshoot the last 30 seconds, but if they didn't want to, you could just cut to another camera of her singing the chorus. You could cut to a montage of her in slow motion with her friends, like, in the car. You know, all those tropey music video things, a sunset. You could cut around it and just fade the music out and fade to black and call it a day.
Oh, absolutely. It's a more controlled environment. There are easier ways to find the out, but you need to understand that if it's not there in production, we can't just make it up and put, although God knows what AI is going to do. Anyway, like I said, not today. Today's not the day.
Let's move on from that. Let's talk about how Miley is trying to also attend Lily's Sweet 16, but is also making promises with Vita to go to an award show. Uh-oh, we have dueling conflicts here.
Gotta be in two places at once. So this was something that was actually kind of a surprise for me because I thought part of the hidden identity was that Miley was still in school in Tennessee. I thought the concealed life was all taking place back at home. I didn't realize that they had like remained in LA and that that was going to be such a big part of the story that she's like gone Hollywood and really forgotten her roots. I mean, that all works as far as setting up the movie itself. But I really thought part of the hidden identity was that she stayed in her hometown. So this was all kind of new to me. Kudos to Beyonce for still being relevant. You know, that's how she gets the offer to go to the, it's an award show. Is it the Billboard Music Awards?
Or the American Music Awards, something.
I think it was the American Music Awards. You're right. But yeah, Miley gets the call where she's got to fill in on like no notice. This is where I'm kind of like, if she's that big, she would already be performing, you know? And Hannah is supposed to be that big in the context of this world.
Right.
So she'd be there anyway. This is conflict for conflict's sake, to your point. The fact that Lily's Sweet 16 is taking place at Santa Monica Pier and they shut it down for this production just goes to show you how big of a phenomenon this show really was. Like, that does not happen. To get these permits to have to shoot and close down the entire pier with that many extras, this is insane. I was watching this and my head was spinning over what a big undertaking this was.
Not only that, but this entire time we have Miley as Hannah in the wig. Now she's out in public with the wig shopping at a store. Okay, this everything she didn't want is now what we're doing. So from somebody that doesn't have the context because they haven't seen the television show, it would be interesting to me to see if they intentionally made this character dislikable at the start of the film because she has gone Hollywood, because she has let fame go to her head. We know that that's where she's gone because Robbie tells us that 5 minutes later.
Right.
But the whole notion that she is out in the world as Hannah when all she wanted was to be out in the world as Miley was a bit of a head scratcher. But again, we did it so that it serves the story, so that she could get into a fight with Tyra Banks over the one pair of shoes, and Oswald just happens to be there, and he's able to videotape it, and it becomes front page news. The same guy who is in her dressing room with a camera, they now are just allowing to be around in every which way possible.
Again, he should have had a restraining order. I will say, though, Tyra Banks was a very good sport.
Oh, yeah.
Because she totally leaned into the stuck-up model stereotype and the crazed model getting into a brawl with Hannah Montana. I mean, I do think it works in the context of her publicist orchestrated the whole thing, because there are a couple of throwaway lines where she's saying, you know, if you get your picture taken buying these shoes, they're going to send you all of this free stuff. So I think you do need that to show how Miley is really getting swept up in the hype. And I remember the first time we watched this, I was also confused as to whether or not the publicist knew her secret at this point. Like, if Miley couldn't be Miley in front of her, even her.
Right.
And I don't think she does. I think the reveal is a reveal to her as well at the very end.
No, I think she was aware. I'm pretty sure she knew. But the fact that we're sitting here asking this question tells you everything you need to know about how well the screenwriting was, quite honestly. Here, there's another thing here. I understand that she steps out of the car in the Miley wig, in the Hannah wig, by accident. Yet there's a very conveniently placed concert stage at Lily's party, and her father happens to be playing. So are you to tell me that she was going to show up as Miley and perform at the party, and no one was going to see that there was perhaps a similarity? Or was she going to show up as Hannah the entire time?
Well, they do address that in the car ride over once they realize that they're being followed. She does say, I can't get out of this car as Miley, and I cannot show up at this party as Hannah. But I feel like she did pick the lesser of two evils, because Lily knows. And Lily, who's been trusted with this secret, should be more understanding. I love how they try to paint Hannah as the, or Hannah, oh my goodness. They try to paint Miley as the bad friend here. Lily's the bad friend. Like, you have to understand what your friend is doing and what she means to so many people. And like, this goes beyond just keeping the secret. Like, you should be supportive of everything that she's trying to do and everything that she's trying to protect. So when something big like the award show comes along, like, you shouldn't be angry.
Right.
That she has to miss your birthday, which is, by the way, after school on what, like a Tuesday?
Yeah, it was.
They went from volleyball practice to the Sweet 16. On the day that her brother also happens to be leaving for college.
Yeah.
I understand they're trying to show us how conflicted she is, but you are doing way too much here.
Yeah, and frankly, I don't think her brother going to college or leaving for college, other than the fact that he ends up in Tennessee, where she ends up later, one really doesn't do anything to serve the story. It happened. He could have just as easily been in Tennessee because Robbie brings the whole family there. I think, to your point, they were just throwing another thing in there. And Robbie's like, well, are you going to be at Jackson's going away party? Are you going to be at Lily's birthday party? Are you going to be at an award show? He's also, like, I like where this does go, where he forces her to go back to Tennessee for the 2 weeks and have the Miley detox.
Mm-hmm.
But
the Hannah detox?
Yeah, whatever. I don't care at this point. Like, there just seems to come to a point where it seems like all of these characters are all over the place. And you can't keep track of what the priorities are.
Well, because they keep flipping sides, I think. Like, sometimes they're trying to be supportive of Miley and what she's tried to do, and other times they're holding it against her.
Yes.
Like with Lily. It's like, and I get it, where you feel a little put out, where it's like, you know, you did all of this so that you could have a normal life. Now do the normal thing. This is a major milestone for me, be it my birthday. And like, yes, the plans change, but like, that's where it's like, okay, you chose your best friend is a pop star. You've still chosen her as your best friend. This is what comes with that. You have to make the sacrifices too.
Yeah. And to my knowledge, based on what I can see here, Miley's almost always done the right thing by Lily within reason, given her level of fame. But I mean, it is what it is. This is all in service of getting her to a farm where more hijinks can ensue. To the point I made before, I like like Robbie becomes the dad that we can all root for. When he doesn't tell her where she's going, he puts her on the plane. She gets off in a field, not in an airport, mind you, gets off in the middle of a field. I think that in this respect, it serves the story. It serves to move the plot forward. But I actually think what he's doing here is the right thing.
I like it. I like the cold splash of water for sure. I also really like the relationship between him and his mother. I find that very believable. That's the other thing. I think out of all of the decisions that Miley's making, this is the one that upsets me the most. And again, too much going on. Like, you're going to miss your grandmother's birthday, but like, no. You don't miss your grandmother's birthday for Beyonce. You have limited birthdays that you get to celebrate with your grandparents. Hug them if you got them.
I like the fact that the whole family is musically inclined. You get a really good Rascal Flatts cameo in here, actually.
That was a surprise, but very fitting for the era.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, sitting on the front porch with a guitar, singing songs. Like, that's what it is. I think that what it does is, because you've been in L.A. the whole time, not just in the film, but you've been in L.A. for the 4 years that the television show had its run, right? So to bring it, quite literally bring it back to the roots and show what their life really was and where they came from, I thought that this was a smart decision.
I like the slice of life that it paints, and I also like what it does for the character, because there's this moment of realization that life has carried on without her. She knows she's away from home. She knows that she's missing home. But I think this is where it was a really smart move to have her quote unquote normal life be in LA, because now there's this aha moment of life went on without me, and I'm out doing all of these big things, and I got to do what I wanted to do. And yes, I miss home, but now it's in your face and you're seeing what you're actually missing out on. And then it immediately contradicts herself, because she has this outburst of, I want my life back.
Yes. I'm glad you bring this up.
I feel like that should have come a little bit later, not in this first moment of you're seeing what you're missing out on. I feel like maybe after the first day, then you realize, like, wow, I'm really missing a lot of important things here. And not just for the people in my life, but I miss this. So I think that was a little bit too early. And then it contradicts itself again, because we go right into Operation Save Hannah.
You spent all of this time, all of these years, developing a story where a pop star does not want to not be a normal teen. She wants a double life. And you completely throw that away in the first 15 minutes of this movie.
Right. And then other than her outburst, we don't really have enough clues. I mean, we can see that she's conflicted for sure, but you're saying, I want my life back. You have Operation Save Hannah Montana. They're opposing ideas, and there just aren't enough visual cues for us to figure out what she really wants and which side she's really on.
Or why. We don't have a why. We don't have a why she doesn't want this double life anymore. We don't know why. I mean, it's great. It's a great moment with Ruby. Margot Martindale was perfect in this. We'll talk about cast in a little while here. But her speech talking about overdeveloping land and building over and paving over farms, and you're so lucky to come from a place like this. And if, you know, you don't like it, you can go back to LA. And like Miley's like, cool, that's exactly what I'm going to do. It like, You take what is supposed to be this great moment, and it is a great moment. It's probably the best screenwriting in the movie. And instead, what you have Miley do is sit there and go, the hell with it, I want a Bloomingdale's, so let's get back to LA. There's something about this whole thing that takes your leading lady, takes everything that you're supposed to like about her, and completely lights it on fire.
I think because they're trying to layer it too much in a way, like everything that you've built to have this double life, she should be finding solace more than anywhere else in her hometown, because she can truly blend in. She can truly be anonymous. So having her like hating on the small town, yes, it does track as far as she's gone Hollywood and she's buying into her own hype, but it just doesn't work for everything that you've tried to build.
The problem with it is, I have no issue with her going Hollywood. If that's where they wanted this to go, if they wanted her to go Hollywood, if they wanted to kind of show that she's not a little girl anymore, she is a teen now, and maybe her priorities are not as they were when this whole thing started, that's fine. You can make that movie. I think they tried to make that movie here. The problem is, up until the moment that she steps out of that plane in Tennessee, she's still trying to live the double life. She's still trying to be in multiple places. She's still trying to hide her identity. She's still trying to be normal. You have a few moments where Vita tells her, like, to your point, if you get photographed buying these shoes, they'll send you more. And that's, ooh, good, I want them. You needed more than that. You needed us to see the downward spiral where all she cared about is fame. You lose that when she tries to do the right thing and show up at Lily's party.
Well, I think that there's also a challenge that's presented because the only other way to do that once you've removed her from Hollywood is to have her really turning her nose up at small town life. And you can't have your lead being cruel to their family and cruel, meaning putting down their way of life, because then you make her completely unlikable. I disagree. Okay.
Because they did it in Sweet Home Alabama and it worked.
Ooh. Did you just throw one of my favorite rom-coms in my face?
And it worked.
Ugh.
But that's because they built to it. This didn't build to it. They got her off a plane, and that was it.
Well, and this is the other thing that I was going to say. I think that they tried to channel all of the hometown dissing through Travis's character, and that's where this feels really clunky. Because he's happy to see her. He confesses that he had a crush on her, which I'm glad they set up front. And yeah. It wasn't just like, oh, you're both Miley and Hannah Montana? I like you, by the way. Because now it's going to seem like he's being opportunistic. So I'm glad that they didn't go that route. But where it sort of falls apart is that she keeps trashing small town life solely through him. Like, she throws a major diss when he's talking about his future and she's like, what, that's all you want to do is sell eggs here? So all of these ideas that are supposed to be directed like as a generalization on the town, they have to remove her family from that. So it's all being filtered and now she's treating him like dirt, which sort of creates a very confusing trope because he knew her as a child, so this doesn't know if it wants to be enemies to lovers or friends to lovers here. And because Travis sort of had to fall on that sword and take all of the negativity about the small town, it sort of reduces the relationship with him too.
I think making him an amalgamation of everything was probably the right way to go about it because you don't want to see her continue to be mean to Grandma Ruby or to her dad or to Lorelai, who really hasn't done anything wrong anyway up to this point. None of them really have. The thing is, she has her, you know, snap to it moment too quickly.
Yes.
Where now it's, okay, I got it. Let's hang banners and do a fundraiser. You know, like, because she was going to do that fundraiser independent of being Hannah Montana. She was not going to do that as Hannah Montana. The problem is, I think that they spent too much time on Zany and too much time on hijinks. You know, her riding a horse, her in a chicken coop, her getting
swinging
dirty
from the rafters of the chicken coop. Why?
This Mrs. Doubtfire double date that we get later on, which only worked because the little kid saw her. But frankly, they spent so much time rushing through character development just to get to the Zany that it doesn't make sense that all of a sudden, because two people said something to her to the effect of, this is your home. And she was like, yeah, it is.
I mean, here's the thing. Because the show is already established, I think they relied too much on that and they felt they didn't need to develop the character. But that's why, you know, I didn't want to watch the show. I want to treat this as a standalone movie. And in that case, you did not develop your lead enough, because we don't know what her motivations are, especially to your point when she decides to sing. Why do you care? We don't know yet. Like, yes, it's your hometown. Yes, you've been told it's your hometown, but we don't know why you decided to care.
Because.
But in the previous scene, she wants them all.
I know.
So
I know.
We haven't seen the aha moment yet.
You don't have it. It just happens.
Yeah.
It's just enough people tell her this is okay, and she just goes with it. Even though we know that's where she's supposed to go. It's what she's supposed to do. We know that to be true. They rushed it. They rushed it to focus on minutia elsewhere. I mean, to me, the biggest surprise of all of this is that you got a very young Taylor Swift. That cameo, I had no idea that that was coming. And frankly, I think when it happened, nobody really cared. I think people went, oh, that's Taylor. Because at times, in reading reviews of this film, there were people, early reviews, when the film came out, that debated who would be the bigger star between the two. Now they've both become immensely popular, but I don't think anybody can debate who the more popular of the two are at this point in time.
At this moment, though, because even when Miley ended the show, she skyrocketed to new levels of fame. Like, she had the built-in audience, and she took that and ran with it. And I mean, you know, we all saw how she tried to shake the Disney image, but like, she had the success without even shaking the image, and her music stood on its own before she really, you know, started going off the rails. But I think she's wanted to take a break from the public eye for a little while and, you know, deal with the fallout of her divorce. And it was probably a good thing for her to calm down. And in that time, Taylor is what Taylor is now. We all know that she is the queen on top of her game, and she's not going to be slowing down anytime soon. But to go back to when this movie came out, you know, I think Taylor had a couple of country hits at this point, and Teardrops on My Guitar was really only just breaking. Miley was the bigger star. And I think, you know, this is part of that country music community where you lift up the next artist so that they get their big break. I think that that's really what this cameo was. I don't think that it was about getting another big name to make a cameo in this film. I think that it was really trying to be more of a launch pad for Taylor's career.
So through the cameo, now we get Mr. Bradley, the evil developer. The evil developer shows up and sits there and goes, "You can't raise enough money. I have all of it." Evil corporate, evil corporate. And it's Travis that pipes up and says, "Well, Miley knows Hannah Montana, and we're going to get her here and she'll perform a show." And everybody just goes along with it, and now Miley and Hannah are along for the ride.
This would have been the best aha moment for her if she decided that she was going to get Hannah and use the fame for good.
Yes.
Why? That is such a huge miss.
I mean, we all knew that it was going to happen, that inevitably Miley and Hannah would be in the same place at the same time. And
oh, yeah.
More hijinks. We knew that this would happen, but I agree with you. She should have stepped up in that moment. If for nothing else, at least for her grandmother, she should have stepped up. But no, it's Travis. It's, again, it's the town coming together saying, "We'll one-up you." But we didn't need the town to one-up him. Because we knew at the end, if you would have told me, "Hey, do you know what the Hannah Montana movie's about? It's about Miley going home to save her town from overdevelopment." I would have gone, "Okay, cool, so they don't build a mall. We know she's going to save it." We don't need the town to be the one, because we already know how this movie's going to end. You needed it to be from Miley.
Absolutely.
Because up to this point, she's still a reluctant hero.
And this is also so typical of this film, where you've got characters that are contradicting each other, where they're either championing Hannah to use it for their own convenience, or in this case, bailing Miley out, which she should be doing on her own. To me, the most egregious thing is that, okay, you have Lily come in as Hannah as the decoy, which is smart. But Lily was so mad.
Yes.
About her birthday. There was no resolution. We haven't seen Miley trying to call her and smooth things over. None of that. Why would she even be motivated to bail Miley out of this one?
Right. There is no reason for her to be there to bail her out, because she doesn't serve a it's not like she was never the body double.
Right.
She wasn't a body double the whole time. It's not like she needed her to be there. But they needed to get Emily Osment back in the movie.
Right.
So they do. And it's, I forgive you, especially because I'm the one that talked to the journalist and I'm the reason why he's on your tail. You told? Yes. All right. Moving on.
That should have been a bigger moment. And that also should have been, like, I'm convinced that there was, like, a phone call that got cut, because that should have come out earlier, where now Lily owes Miley the favor.
Yes.
But the last thing we saw was her getting mad. And if she's over this, she shouldn't be helping Miley out. Even though Miley is in her hometown, like, there's not even a line of dialogue from Lily that's like, well, you know, you've been here for a week. You're really trying to help your family out. You're trying to go back to the girl that I know is my best friend. I'm going to help you get there. Nothing.
But if we didn't have Lily, we wouldn't have the remake of Mrs. Doubtfire. Because if Lily's not there to tell Lorelai that she will attend the mayor's dinner while Miley is accepting the offer of a dinner date from Travis, we don't have hijinks. Our favorite thing, hijinks.
I mean, really, though, did you think that this movie was going to be anything but building to having to be in two places at once? And there are other, you know, it's not just the Mrs. Doubtfire thing. I mean, Mrs. Doubtfire does it brilliantly, but there have been so many other shows like Boy Meets World, Topanga Sweet 16, Corey's Gotta Be in Two Places at Once, and they reference the original Flintstones that did this in two places at once. But when you have a whole character like in Mrs. Doubtfire that you're portraying, like Hannah, you have such an easy out because you have a costume. It's not like you're out as yourself and somebody can catch you having to be in these two places. You're two different people. Mrs. Doubtfire, obviously, I mean, that's a perfect movie. And that's exposed because there's an emergency. It was an accident. Here, it's more hijinks. It's a quick montage through these revolving doors. It's Lobster. And it to your point, it's the girl.
Yeah.
That sees her and she realizes, I think, by the way, that's her sister in real life. I think that's Noah Cyrus. And that's why she gets so much screen time and like these long, wistful looks.
Mm-hmm.
But that shouldn't have been Hannah's downfall here.
The other thing is, Hannah's signing autographs for other people as she walks in. It just, like, I guess it serves to, like, your heart's supposed to break for the little kid. That's like, please, Hannah Montana. And, like, hardly speaking above a whisper for her to see what her hero is, which is a phony hero.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand why they did it. I don't mind that it's there. I think it makes a lot of sense. I just wish that maybe the little kid had gotten swept up in the crowd a little bit more, as opposed to sort of just being ignored by Hannah as she walked in. Because, again, you're not really doing anything that serves the leading lady all that well in conjunction with this dinner hijinks. And you know what drives me the craziest? At one point, she's crawling underneath a table,
oh,
I think with
Lord.
Jackson, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The legs to the folding table are up. The legs are up on the folding table. Because they couldn't have them distended, because then you can't crawl underneath
it. Then you can't crawl, yeah.
But it stands out clear as day that the legs are folded up on the tables.
Yeah, so they have it suspended so that they can crawl underneath it.
Yes.
I mean, what's funny about that is that's such a production error, too, that you've exposed that you're using a folding table. Because that's not part of the scene where Lorelai tried to, you know, piece together this elaborate dinner and she's doing the best with what she has to work with. No, this is supposed to be a fancy dinner for the mayor. You're supposed to have a nice table. That's kind of a look behind the curtain at what production was dealing with.
No. I'll give you a look behind the curtain at food and beverage. Every time you see one of those big tables with tablecloths on it, it's just folding tables. Nobody, unless you're Bruce Wayne, nobody has that big table.
I'm thinking this is a conference table that's like dressed. I know it's not a huge banquet table. This is not, you know,
no.
16th century France.
It's not. I don't mind that they use the tables because that's exactly what you would use. You would use a bunch of 6 and 8 foot tables to build that out. And then you'd throw tablecloths on it with runners and call it a day. It's the fact that the legs are up. Is it telepathy? Is there a Jedi in the room? Is Billy Ray Cyrus a Jedi? Like, what is it that is suspending the tables from the floor?
Two production assistants.
Yeah, I know so that's what crawl. It is. I know that's what it is.
I did not even catch that, honestly.
Because
talking about is so ridiculous. I don't even remember what it was at this point.
Wasn't it the ferret? Didn't the ferret get out and was biting people?
Well, that's the other thing. There is a ferret, but no, I don't think that was Jackson's issue.
Irrelevant.
Yeah. Back to the little girl, though, that is what eventually gives Miley the aha moment here. There's a realization of, you know, this is why I do what I do. Hannah means so much to so many people. I can't give Hannah up. But I feel like there's no repercussions about... I mean, yes, she feels a little guilty that Hannah's secret was exposed to probably the worst person. Like, there's, you know, there's obviously, like, the journalist. You don't want him to know because you don't want the secret exposed. But the worst thing that happens in that scenario is that you have repercussions to deal with as far as your career. This really hits home because of the emotion, and you're essentially traumatizing this little girl who's too young to fully understand what's happening here. So, yes, there is the moment where Miley is looking at this from Hannah's perspective and why she's going to want to continue as Hannah, but I don't feel like there's that double whammy that she should be feeling of, look at what my own selfishness did to this little girl who looks up to me so much.
No, and it's because what they immediately do is they make it about Travis. Now, I think that in terms of acting, I think that this is probably the best acted scene in the movie. And that's because of Miley. And when I say Miley, I don't mean Miley Stewart. I mean Miley Cyrus.
Yeah.
She's outstanding in this scene. When she literally breaks down in tears as he is calling her out for everything that she has done, and he's not completely correct, but he's not completely wrong about it either.
Mm.
His frustration is legitimate. The fact that she lied, that's legitimate. She was not making fun of him the whole time. We know this to be true. He doesn't. So, wrong place, wrong time. Like, this all works.
He also doesn't have any idea how hard she tried.
Correct. So, like, as a Miley moment, both for the character and the actress, it's outstanding. But I think that they leaned on that more so than leaning on what it meant to the child. And I think that, of course, you're going to have the blowback, you're going to have the fallout with him, but that could have been later. Mm. It didn't need to be in that moment. I think the moment of the curtain's been drawn back, and now the person, there's other than her parents and her grandparents, a kid that age, nobody means more to her than Hannah Montana.
Maybe that's Santa.
That's her whole world. So for her to see that look behind the curtain, that moment is so powerful and it works, but I wish they had done more with it.
Especially because I feel like it's reduced by this revolving door. that is a tad too on the nose. The other thing that I bump on is that this entire time, Dad shanghaied her plans of going to New York and performing to get her back here and remind her of where she came from. And he wants her to have a normal life. He doesn't want her to miss out on these life experiences. But he does nothing to help her until it's too late. The only thing that he does, he orchestrated this entire thing. And in the 11th hour, he covers when Lorelai is ready to, like, take a pound of flesh out of her. However, he does make a really big sacrifice. So it sort of redeems itself. But I feel like it was too little too late when this was entirely his doing.
And frankly, him calling off the start, it's hardly even a start. Him throwing his hands up at the beginning of what could be a relationship with Lorelai, I mean, I guess it's the most he can do in the moment to protect Miley's secret. But it's not like Miley has been pining for a mother the whole time. You know, we know that her mother's gone. I would imagine that's been established in the television show.
That's also something I'm very curious about. So listeners that grew up on Hannah Montana, please let us know if this was like a huge deal in the show.
Yeah.
I mean, it should have been, but I'm wondering if they sort of... I'm wondering how big of a thing it was in the show, or if he was portrayed as the single dad and they wrote in that now he's a widower.
Yeah. I just feel like you needed to establish more that was a very important thing. Because when I think of all of the things that happen in this movie and all of the matters of importance, the least of which was his would-be relationship with Lorelai, or even finding him a compatible mate.
I mean, it does lend to her ultimate decision, though, and exposing the secret to her hometown, because she did realize what her dad just gave up, and that it's not just her making sacrifices to have the double life, that this impacts everyone around her. So I think you did need something big to justify her decision of not wanting to lie to everybody that she cares about anymore.
So let's get to the final scene of the movie, where she shows up for the concert, she gets halfway through the first song and says, "I can't do this anymore," and pulls the wig off. We all knew that that wig was coming off. We all knew that she was going to expose the secret. I'm 100% good with her exposing the secret. I'm 100% good with her accepting her hometown. The fact that the entire town is now willing to cover it up is not realistic. The fact that the journalist, because his daughters have been flown in and they see how much, he sees how much they love Hannah Montana, that I'm not going to buy into. But I also think that you didn't need her to not be Hannah Montana. I think that you needed her to be one and the same, in that I don't think you needed to keep the ruse going. I think the entire point was so that she learned that she could be both Hannah and Miley and just work under a stage name, and she didn't need to hide anymore. And you've undone the entire purpose of the movie to get back to the pilot episode of the television show.
Exactly.
And so what did we just watch?
If this was the finale, that would have been the stronger ending. But I think that they were sort of handcuffed by the television show, because how are you going to keep it going when there's a small part of the population that does know her secret? I completely agree with you. As a character moment, it just doesn't work, because it's not showing that she learned anything by this. If her decision was, if I'm going to expose who Hannah really is, it's going to change the rest of my life, because now I'm going to either have to move forward as Hannah or as Miley, really. like, she can keep the Hannah Montana name, but now Miley is going to be thrust into the spotlight. And that's really the decision that she should have come to. That's the ownership she should have taken over her own life, because she realized it's affecting everybody else. Now I just have to own who I am. I can't have a private life anymore. But that's what she takes away from the small town, is because when she wants her private life, she'll go home to them. So you could have this full circle moment of, now she gets the best of both worlds again. And she can just be herself, and she doesn't have to worry about the lies and the double life anymore. And a good publicist is going to eat this up and want to spin it as, look at what this girl has done for you. And then, you know, Miley's going to become even more famous than Hannah at that point, because she's got a great story to back it up.
Nobody is going to stop listening to or supporting an artist simply because they gave up their stage name.
Right.
Nobody did it with Lady Gaga. I mean, she still performs as Lady Gaga, but we know her name is Stephanie. You know, like, nobody is going to give up on an artist, because it's not like she was lip syncing. She wasn't Milli Vanilli, right? Like, it wasn't fake. It was a stage name. Spoiler alert. They all use them.
The other thing where I think it's really hard to suspend disbelief for this is that all she did was take off the wig. You're telling me not but one of you thought that there was a little bit of a resemblance? It's not like she was wearing that much makeup. I mean, they do go so far as to show her, you know, using the makeup wipes when she's got to be in two places at once. So, like, okay, Miley doesn't wear makeup, Hannah does, but it's not that much where you shouldn't be able to see the difference.
I mean, 80 years later, people don't know Clark Kent is Superman. Again, I'm willing to suspend disbelief in certain instances.
Yes, but I think that you're asking a little bit too much of your audience to suspend their disbelief that much.
Let's talk about our cast and characters, starting with Miley Cyrus, who plays both Miley Stewart and Hannah Montana. I think that with having no loyalty to the source material, right? Just going based on what we've seen here, I thought that Miley Cyrus did a really great job. I think that she's immensely talented as a performer, so she works on that side of the microphone. I think that on the other side, just strictly from an acting perspective, I think that I thought she towed the line very well, because the show at this point has wrapped up. You're 4 or 5 years into the run of the show. So your target audience who's been with it from the start has grown up, along with Miley, right? And so you do want to carry a little bit of an emotional weight. You want to make it a little bit more serious, but at the same time, there's 8 and 9 year olds that are going to go watch this that want to see her slip and fall and drop an egg in the chicken coop. I think that she toes the line very well. I just, as previously stated, my issue with the character is that this entire thing is based on her wanting a double life, and it seems like that whole thing gets thrown away in the first 15 to 20 minutes of screen time. And it seems like the motivation for the franchise is now completely out the window, and you've rewritten the character for the sake of making this movie and putting her in Tennessee.
I agree with most of what you're saying, especially how they are sort of handcuffed here, that this is in the middle of the run of the show and they still have to go back to the show and make that all work for several more seasons. You know, I'm not suggesting that this should have been the finale and that they should have stopped here, but I think that because they had to be so mindful of, okay, we're still doing a television series, we can't progress this character too far. I mean, if I'm being honest, I was a little bit distracted because I was thinking so much about Miley Cyrus's real life, because this portrayal of Miley Stewart is really what her parents tried to do. They tried to keep that private family life in Tennessee. So Miley Cyrus's real downtime was back at home in Tennessee. It's not like here where, you know, we've talked about how her off time from being Hannah is still based in LA. So while I was thinking about the actress's life. I think that that also lent to how good her performance was with the one-on-one relationships, especially with her grandmother. Like, to me, that was the most real. That was the most believable. It felt very grounded. So those were some of my favorite scenes. And I think Miley's biggest success was that she was able to exercise a lot of restraint in the over-the-top comedy scenes, because they are written to be so big and so zany. I think that because she was able to sort of rein that all in, it didn't completely go off the rails and feel completely silly, where, you know, the kids can still enjoy it. They're still going to get a laugh out of it, but it wasn't too far gone to make the movie feel ridiculous.
Speaking of relationships, let's talk about Emily Osment as Lily, her best friend. I think that it's so obviously clear that they've been doing this for 4 years, because I think that their chemistry was great. I think that Emily Osment, the whole thing seems very natural, to the point where it's like more times than not, and I'll be honest with you, I think a lot of these characters are one-dimensional. And I could just as easily sit here and say, I think anybody could have played this role. That may have been true at the start, but I think that Emily Osment, she so naturally has a relationship with Miley here that I believe that they were friends outside of this. So I find the whole relationship to be believable. Now, as far as a character goes, as I said, she's one-dimensional. I think it's great that she's loyal, almost to a fault. I like the fact that she's human. I like the fact that you get moments with her in this film where she does tell Oswald secrets because it's out of pure frustration. Like, and I think that given the age of the character and the actress, like, it's very natural that that would happen. We've all done something to hurt a friend out of spite. It's just a matter of whether you can recover from that or not. In this case, as we previously stated, I think that they recovered from it a little too quickly with no explanation. But overall, I found her to be fine in the movie.
See, it's interesting that you say that, because of the very little I know about Hannah Montana, the series, I thought that they didn't like each other in real life.
Maybe they didn't, but I believe that they do.
Well, no, then that just proves that they're great actresses. I mean, I don't know. I could be totally wrong, but I thought I remembered that they didn't really get along, or like they didn't stay in touch after the show wrapped, because they just didn't care to. But I could have it all backwards. I think Emily Osment's performance was just fine. I agree with you. I think it could have been anybody. My bigger issue is with the character, and that there's that moment where she comes to bail Miley out that is completely unearned, because she's still furious about the birthday party, which she shouldn't be. But then she comes to her rescue anyway. And it's like, if you're mad and you're holding it against Miley that she is having a normal life, why are you enabling her?
Right.
But again, handcuffed by the series.
Billy Ray Cyrus plays Robbie, her father, which is a very easy role for him to play because he is, in fact, her father. It's funny that so many kids now know him from this. We remember him from Achy Breaky Heart, which was like the earworm in 1991 or 1992, whenever it was that song came out. It was somewhere in that range where it was like you just could not escape Achy Breaky Heart. It's become timeless. Let's call it what it is. So it's interesting to see that he made this transition into acting, but I think that it works. I think it probably came off easier because he is playing the father to the title character, and he is the father to the real actress, obviously. But I think that he's a dad we can root for. I think that he's well-intentioned. I think he could so easily be the single dad trope. He could so easily be Danny Tanner, and he's not. I think that the performance is a little more nuanced. Not that we don't love Danny Tanner, but it's a little less wacky, and it's a little more grounded. I'd be interested to go back and watch the show to see if he's Danny Tanner or if he's this the whole time.
The words were coming out of my mouth. I would go back and watch some of Hannah Montana, the series, for him, because I would be very interested to see if he's, to your point, sitcom dad, because I feel like if he was in the series, this is a huge transition, because you don't have him doing the zany, silly scenes. He's really the one who grounds this whole movie, because he's trying to prove a point to Miley. You know, we talked about how we love that he's doing the tough love parenting, and he just drops her in the middle of nowhere and makes her figure it out and puts the pressure on her to make a choice. So I think that as far as character growth, going from a sitcom to this, he's probably the most deep out of everyone.
I will mostly agree with that, because I think that Grandma Ruby, played by Margot Martindale, is probably, like, she's still waters run deep. I don't know that she was on, I don't think she was on the television show. I could be wrong about that, but I don't believe she was on it, because in all of the credits that I've seen with her, I don't recall seeing Hannah Montana. And, like, we've seen her in The Rocketeer, so we've seen her in Disney before. But I've said, and I believe I said it when we reviewed The Rocketeer, that, you know, Margot Martindale is good in everything, therefore she's good in this, and that stands true here. I think that the best dialogue that the character has comes from her. I think that whereas Travis is an amalgamation of what the town represents, I think that she's an amalgamation of what the town feels. And I think that it was really smart to give her those moments, because frankly, she is maybe next to Miley, because I am going to give Miley Cyrus her flowers. I think that she's probably...
Did you do that on purpose?
No. but I think that she's debatably the best talent in the film in terms of acting. Miley does give her a run for her money. So I think to give her those moments was very, very smart.
Yeah, I mean, I love Margot Martindale and everything that she's in. Rocketeer, Dexter especially. I was just looking through the series credits, and I think that this maternal figure role in the series was filled by Aunt Dolly in the television show. So I think that this was written for the movie specifically. I love their scenes together. I love their relationship. And I also love the relationship that she has to Billy Ray Cyrus. I mean, she's just such a talented actress. I think she's what makes everything that much more believable. And I think that she was just really... She's probably the most well-written character, to your point about having a point of view channeled through one person.
Jason Earls plays Jackson Stewart, the brother. This is trip and fall, brother. This is zany hijinks, comic relief, brother. It's such a trope. I think that he does it well. I don't think, certainly it's not a shot at the actor, but that is literally his purpose. And I feel like at times they amped him up because they couldn't do as much zany with Miley, because now she's grown up in the movie.
To that point, it's a good balance, but for his character, I feel like this is a good sitcom brother, but it doesn't necessarily translate, because I feel like all of his scenes were forced. Like, there's that beat where they're doing, I don't know what it is, a kid's birthday party. Is it supposed to be a kid's birthday party? Or is it supposed to be something that he's doing for college where he ends up wrestling a gator?
I thought
none of that made any sense.
It looked like he was working at like a Gatorland or a nature preserve, and it was like a camp or a tour or something that was coming.
Right.
But he wrestled a gator. They didn't need to tell us what he was doing. He just wrestled an alligator.
It could have very well been on the grandmother's property.
Yep.
But it just doesn't make sense.
They got a lot of gators in Tennessee? I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, not where we were. We were in Tennessee,
no.
But I think that's it. It's supposed to, whether there are or there aren't, if they're not, this only serves the purpose to reinforce the idea of they are completely removed from the city. But it just doesn't jive with you're setting up that he's going back home to Tennessee to go to college. And now you're what, on summer break? Like, you needed to establish that he's going to be a veterinarian for this to make sense.
Yeah. I don't know. Vanessa Williams, she plays Vita.
I love Vanessa Williams.
I was going to say, like, I was happy to see her in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, to see her and Billy Ray Cyrus on the screen in the same film was, like, such a throwback to the 90s. But she did a really good job with this. I thought that Vita as the character is your typical publicist. I'm not going to say it's typecast. The character's not special. It's just portrayed very well.
Yeah, I think the things that I enjoyed more about Vita were because of the performance and the actress than I did about the character. Because I feel like this could have been a good place for more comedy. And instead, Vita was sort of an antagonist. And this is where, you know, my wheels really started turning about what would a publicist today be doing. I mean, they'd be spinning all of these things, right? And she does, in the sense of she's trying to get Hannah these photo ops so people see her out shopping. But I just feel like there could have been a lot more comedy as far as her trying to spin this, you know, Hannah Montana throws dinner for the mayor, you know, like I was missing that part of it, of her trying to capitalize mm-hmm. on the small town life and the small town aspect. I think that could have been really funny.
Peter Gunn plays Oswald Granger. Listen, it's nothing against Peter Gunn. I just so dislike this character. I understand, and I think it works that you have the paparazzi chasing her, trying to expose her secret. It's not unlike what a lot of the paparazzi have done historically or continue to do. But she's a kid, and this is just creepy.
Yeah.
And that's my big problem with it.
I think that it would have been a lot more effective if they didn't have him sneaking into the dressing room. Because that just puts a very bad taste in your mouth from the jump. I think it would have been more entertaining if he had been, like, hiding in the bushes the whole time. Or, like, if he got the tip off about her going back to Tennessee and he was really doing more covert operations. Spice World comes to mind, actually, where they had, like, the private detective following the girls. I think maybe he was a paparazzi, like, trying to get that horrible photo that they were going to use. And you completely miss the opportunity to play this for comedy. But what's worse is that they just start him off in such a bad place. I also want to point out one of the daughters, though, for the Stranger Things fans, Natalie Dyer is one of the daughters. I recognized her right away because she's just got that same chin. She looks exactly the same.
We have Barry Bostwick playing Mr. Bradley. He's great. I love Barry Bostwick. What a waste of talent, though.
Yeah, like, Barry Bostwick, please. Yeah,
he has maybe three scenes in the movie, and it's basically the corporate, she, and then walks away. That's it. That's the whole... You could have literally cast anybody to play that role. It's not that he did it bad. It's just that when you get somebody with the amount of talent as Barry Bostwick, you have to give him a better role. Or at least if he's going to have very little scenes, like Teen Beach does it really well with him because he puts so much heart into the very little screen time that he has. This could have been anybody.
I forgot about that. How could I forget Teen Beach? Yeah, I feel like I would have rather seen less chicken coop scenes and more with him and more comedy from him. I mean, you know, they do it where he gets his comeuppance. There's the hot sauce. There's the trashing of the mall diorama. But I still would have liked to see maybe more comedy come from him being the villain instead of just duping him.
Yeah. Let's move on and talk about our songs here. I'm going to throw this in, the best of both worlds. My understanding is that this is the theme song to the television show, but because they perform it and it becomes such a big part of the intro to the movie, we're going to throw it in there. I think it's a decent radio hit. I didn't mind the transition into the music video because you had to... I think it made sense to... You needed her to open her concert with something. It would be odd to me that they'd be shooting the music video, though, after the song was a hit. Usually, and maybe this is us being a product of our time, the song usually became a hit because of the video. So that's the... I don't mind the transition because you had to get them out of there and you had to put the creep in the dressing room, though you really didn't. It's fine, but I don't know that it totally works.
I agree with you as far as, you know, the song is out already. It's a hit single. Usually music videos were used to promote the single, if anything. And this was already an established hit. I mean, I even recognized it from the show. Of the little that I knew about the series, I instantly recognized the song. But I guess that's it. If it's the theme song of the show, it does represent the whole character. You need to put it in here somewhere. But yeah, the music video doesn't make sense, especially because then they slow it down. She gets knocked on the head and then it's a luau. Like, you could have used the whole thing as a dream sequence if you wanted, if this was all for the sake of squeezing this song in here.
Yeah. Let's get crazy. I think it makes for a decent pop hit. I think they were going for radio hits in this soundtrack. Let's just call it what it is. And obviously they got an immense one that we'll talk about shortly here. It's fun. I just don't like the scene because I feel like that concert stage with the band at the birthday party where we're not supposed to draw attention to anyone other but Lily. It doesn't make sense. It was just a reason for them to put her on stage because she has to sing another song because we've got CDs to sell.
I mean, I slightly disagree because the song has to match the energy of that scene. It's got to be fitting for the pier. But to your point, none of it should have happened. I think it would have been maybe more effective if she was like put on the spot and had to do something acoustic.
Yeah, I just don't buy that stage was so conveniently there with her father on stage, and yet she's not supposed to be drawing attention to herself.
Right.
That's my big problem. The Good Life, I think that song, you know, we're back on the farm. I think it works. Is it a little bit of See and Say? Yeah, it is. But I think it works for painting a picture, even though the picture's been painted right in front of us. It's fine. It's not bad. The song's fine. It's fine.
I think it's more for pacing than anything else.
Yeah, you're trying to give it some breathing room.
Yeah.
Don't Walk Away. This is a... If there's a song that's just thrown in there, it's just Walk Away. I think that it's filler. I think you could have done without it. Of course, you're not gonna do without it because, again, you're trying to go for hits and sell CDs. But I don't know that you necessarily needed this song. I think everything that you're seeing in the... I don't need this song to further explain to me what it is that I'm seeing on the screen.
Honestly, I couldn't even tell you at what point this song comes in. I don't have any notes on it, and I don't remember the sequence.
Back to Tennessee. It makes sense that you're going to use Billy Ray Cyrus, that you're going to use his talent, you're going to use his name, even though it's his daughter's movie, and give him a single.
No, and it totally makes sense that, you know, he's sort of got the boys back together, the band back together, because at his mom's birthday, he's hanging out with Rascal Flatts. They're all playing music. So I buy, you know, he wants to go home and here he's the hotshot musician and people are coming to see him. My only gripe is that I feel like this would have been a much better song for Miley to sing at this point because, you know, we talked about how it's unmotivated that she's all of a sudden going to help out her town. This could have been her aha moment. If maybe her dad suggested, why don't you sing that song that you always sang growing up. And it was that. And now she's got a ballad and she's sort of mulling things over as she's singing. And then she realizes, okay, I want to help. And instead, we get Hoedown Throwdown.
Walker Hayes before it was Walker Hayes. That's my note. And that it's good for kids.
So good for kids that it ended up on the Billboard list. That was the first time that I had ever heard of this song, was when we did our top 100 countdown, according to Billboard.
Billboard got a lot of things wrong. I wouldn't have included this on that list.
I think it's... I get that you want to have a line dancing number, right? Like, that's a given. Just based on the setting, you're in the barn, you know, you're pulling her back to her roots. Totally makes sense. But there were just a million other ways to go about it. And I feel like instead of, you know, she's like, all right, we're going to do a little hip hop. Why not blend in something that feels like Hannah? If it's the best of both worlds, so to speak, why don't you meld them together and do some sort of like pop country thing?
I could understand if they had used this song in the television show. I could understand if the Hannah Montana movie was a DCOM. But because you've obviously made a feature-length motion picture that went to the cinema, and because the rest of the soundtrack, for the most part, is very mature... This just seems like something that had once been considered for the show and they didn't use it and they needed another song and they stuck it in because it doesn't seem to fit the rest of the soundtrack, quite honestly.
Or anything that is related to Hannah.
Let's talk about what I think is probably the best song in the movie.
Best song, one of the best character moments.
Yeah, Butterfly Fly Away. The duet between Miley and Billy Ray, or Robbie Ray and Miley, however you want to look at them. They're father and daughter. It's real. We know. There's so much heart behind this, and I love the meaning behind it for each of them mutually. Like, it's such a well-written song. This, to me, is probably... I understand why The Climb, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, I understand why that was the big hit. I think this is better.
I'm shocked that she never released this as a single in her own career. And this, to me, goes to prove what a good actor Billy Ray is, because this is his daughter, you know. And I'm not talking about Miley Stewart. I'm talking about Miley Cyrus. Look at everything that is built around her, how big the show is. She's got her own successful music career. Now she's got this movie about the show. You know, it's art imitating life, imitating art. And I can't imagine what it must have been like for him to sit there looking at his daughter, who has achieved so much in such a short time, and not just completely breaking down crying. And he holds it together. I think it's a beautiful scene. I think it's really well done. It's no Butterfly Kisses. Like, that was our generation's sad growing up, growing pain song. But it's really good.
The Climb. It's still getting played on radio. It's still a good song. Like, it is a very good song. I think that her performance is spectacular. I think it shows off her talents extraordinarily well. I understand why it was the single off the album. I understand why it played very well in radio. It's the second best song on the soundtrack.
I would agree with that. What I like about the song, what I've always liked about the song, is knowing that it came from this movie. It transcends the movie because it's got such a strong message, which I think is great. But with all of that being said, I actually don't think it fits the movie very well. It does for her character, but I think that this is more reflective, and that's why it was an album single. I think this is more reflective of what Miley Cyrus was going through and not Miley Stewart. Because at this point, her career has gotten so big, she can't really hide in Tennessee anymore. So I think this is more about breaking out of her hometown, breaking out of everything that she's known as a child, which includes being Hannah, and really forging her way forward on her own. And I think it's more reflective of her real life than it is of the film or the show.
You'll always find your way back home. This song, it's fun. It's what finishes the film. It's very on the nose. It doesn't transcend the movie. it was written by Taylor Swift. So, like, when you listen to the lyrics and how tongue-in-cheek and how smart a lot of the lyrics are, even though it is married to what you are literally seeing on screen and nothing more, it is a decent song. I mean, I don't have much more to say on it.
Yeah, it's a good way out.
Yeah. Final thoughts on the Hannah Montana movie. I'll go first. I think that the movie's fun for kids. It wasn't as zany and wacky as I thought it was going to be. On the same hand, it wasn't as, I mean, let's just call it what it is. My expectations were extraordinarily low. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I think the movie's, it's there. I can't tell you that it's an incredible work of art. I can't tell you that it is extraordinarily true to the source material, because just based on the very little that I know, I'm not sure that it is. Now, with that being said, I want to go back and watch the show, because I bet you as a television show, this is probably great. I bet you that this made for so much fun to watch on TV, that it probably doesn't play as well as a movie. I think Full House couldn't make a movie. I don't think Boy Meets World could make a movie. I don't think Growing Pains could make a movie. There were just certain shows that we watched growing. Here, Doug didn't make a good movie. You know, we just talked about that a few weeks ago. There are certain things that we watch as kids that I think, you know, this isn't going to make a great movie. There are some that will break the mold. I think the Rugrats did it better than most others. I don't know that this works as well for a movie as it does as a television show.
What are you talking about, Sean? This is cinema. No, I'm kidding. I agree with most of what you said. I didn't out and out hate it nearly as much as I thought that I was going to. I actually enjoyed it not only for what it was, but for also the way that it made me think in terms of modern day celebrity and, you know, the way things were back then when social media was really just kicking off into what it is that we know now, and how it was becoming, you know, something that was enjoyed by people to stay in touch and network,
right,
to transitioning over into a business entity, and how that has just, you know, made things just sort of spiral out of control. And even though it was the humble beginnings of that sort of an era, it's almost like we've come full circle, and the more things change, the more they stay the same. So I was actually surprised how much I took away in terms of the way that it was making me think.
We want to know what you have to say about the Hannah Montana movie. You can let us know on all major social media platforms at Monoreal Radio, or you can send us an email, monorealradio@gmail.com. News of the Week is coming up, but first a quick break.
News of the Week is proudly sponsored by KMV Travel. KMV Travel is a boutique travel agency that helps families plan personalized vacations and create unforgettable memories in the happiest place on earth. If you've dreamed of visiting Waltz Park or racing with Lightning McQueen in Cars Land, a KMV Travel specialist will work with you to customize the perfect getaway for you and your family. Your KMV Travel advisor will ensure you know the ins and outs of the My Disneyland app, assist with dining reservations, and of course, share their favorite hacks so you can get the most out of your vacation. Visit kmvtravel.com to soar over to California now.
If you're thinking of booking a trip to a Disney destination, you have to contact Jackie Zalesi. My husband and I recently celebrated our 10-year wedding anniversary and wanted to go on a trip, just the two of us. Jackie suggested Disneyland, knowing we'd never been and I had been dreaming of going. I am so thankful for her suggestion, as it was the most magical way to celebrate. Jackie got us a fantastic deal, but still constantly checked for discounts to make sure we were guaranteed the lowest price. Having recently visited Disneyland, she was a great source for helpful information and had suggestions for everything, including meals, Max Pass, even places to visit in Los Angeles on our non-park day. Upon arrival at our hotel, we experienced the easiest check-in because Jackie had taken care of everything. Throughout our trip, Jackie was in constant contact, making sure we had everything we needed and answering any questions we had. Our vacation was perfect.
We got a couple of trailer drops that we have to talk about.
very exciting trailer drops. And, you know, I was thinking about it and I was like, knowing that we're coming off of the strike last year, I forgot how much there still is coming out, which is really exciting and really nice.
We got the new Deadpool trailer. If you are of age, go ahead and watch the uncensored version. It is hysterical. Like, I love Deadpool. I love the first two movies. I've been so excited for this one. I cannot wait to see what they make Hugh Jackman do in this movie. It's going to be outrageous for all the right reasons.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much what I expected it to be as far as the introduction of Wolverine. But what I was really surprised about was coming out of the Ant-Man, not just helmet, there is a skull in there if you look closely. So I'm really excited to see what they do with that. You know, he jumps through a Doctor Strange portal. So clearly we're going to be playing in and out of the multiverse. But I'm wondering if this movie is going to be more like everything that I hoped Loki was going to be, that Deadpool's sort of been there in the background the entire time, which I think would be really cool. But I'm really excited about it. And in case you were wondering, yes, we are going to review the first two Deadpools as a lead-in to the third one. Because I mean, we revisit them every once in a while. We watch them at least once a year. But, like, I really want them fresh in front of my brain before we go into the third one.
We got the Idea Man trailer drop. This is going to be the Disney Plus documentary about the life of Jim Henson.
I'm already crying.
It looks outstanding. They're going for it. Like, everything that I hope that the Beach Boys does, they're already telling you they're going for it with the Jim Henson documentary, and I am just so excited for it.
Same. I wish that they would do, like, an entire Disney Legend series. Like, anybody that's ever been inducted, they could just keep that series going and going because there are so many Disney Legends, but they all deserve to be profiled like this. So this was a long time coming, but I'm just so excited for it.
And you could do it episodically.
Yes.
Get on it, Disney. That's the kind of content that we need.
Yeah.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Let's move to the parks. Victoria and Albert's, which is a restaurant that we've dined at once before. It is in all likelihood a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
We'll see.
It has been given its Michelin star that it so desperately should have been awarded. The food is spectacular. The service, outstanding. It's just very special.
Admittedly, I always thought that it had one. This was, like, really news to me that they didn't. Yeah, incredibly well-deserved, because just across the board, it is truly a one-of-a-kind experience, from the incredible service, the immaculate food, just everything top to bottom. It can't be a once-in-a-lifetime experience. They redid the restaurant, they redid the interior, and I want to see the new decor, and we definitely have to go again. Maybe not soon, but for, like, a big occasion. It's worth it if you are so inclined.
Yes. Not soon. Not soon sounds good. The AP Lounge that we've been talking about.
Ask and you shall receive.
Morocco. It's going to Morocco. What a better location this time around.
Not only is it a better location because we'll be able to spread out a little bit more, there's more room, but what a great use of that space. And everybody's kind of been wondering, like, what they are doing with it, because Tangerine Cafe, they're closing it. They're using it as a festival booth. They're renovating the area. You know, they're not, like, I feel like it's always something different, but I feel like this is a really great idea and I can't wait to go check it out.
Food and wine dates have been announced. This took a lot of people by surprise. Epcot's Food and Wine Festival, August 29th start date, running through November 23rd. I think people forget that this festival used to run exclusively in the fall.
Yeah.
It didn't start until the end of September. It ran into the first week, borderline second week of November. The Wine and Dine Half Marathon sort of served as the crescendo on the festival. And we have said, especially after we moved here, while I love attending the festival, I don't want cheddar cheese soup and filet mignon in July and August when it's 97 degrees outside with 95% relative humidity. And they combated that with these rotating menus that were confusing. And if you were here on vacation and you wanted to try something, the thing that you wanted would be gone, or the thing that you wanted, they're not serving yet. There was a lot of inconsistency. I am just glad. And it's a very expensive festival to put on, because now you've got to book all of those musical acts. You know, that costs money. I'm so glad that they've scaled it back to be a little bit more traditional when it comes to how they're running the festival.
I agree. I mean, I think for Canada alone, nobody wants soup in July. So I think for that on its own, it's a good move to push it back a little bit. But I also really like the idea of letting Epcot breathe. And to your point, pre-pandemic, that's what this festival always was. It was a fall festival. So I'm totally on board with it being a little bit shorter. Not that, I mean, here's the thing, right? We personally didn't want to go in July. So that doesn't mean I want to ruin everybody else's fun that's here on summer vacation and wants to enjoy the festival. But I just don't know where the idea of Epcot always has to have a festival came from.
Yeah.
And to your point, I was kind of thinking about that too. I was like, oh, was this a budget cut? Because it's not just the musical acts, it's all of the added vendors and the extra food station. I mean, it's not just, you know, the cast members that are working the booths, it's the chefs, it's the behind the scenes, it's a lot that goes into it. So I'm wondering if it's a budget cut in favor of something else, if maybe something else is going to be announced, because I don't think that pulling back on the Food and Wine Festival to clear out space for the Encanto show over the summer really balances anything out. But I'm just wondering if there's something else coming, or I'm sure we're going to get the Method to the Madness sooner rather than later, because not only with D23, the D23 Expo coming up, we're just about halfway to Halloween. All of that stuff is probably going to be coming out next week. But I thought that that was a really interesting choice, too, is that Not So Scary usually starts mid-August. So you're starting it around the same time.
I think it's just a guess. And I'm sure we'll delve into some of this a little bit more on our upcoming Dockside chat. I get the feeling that there will be, not this year, because I think it's too much to pull off in a month and a half. I think you are going to see a summer festival come to Epcot. I don't know what that summer festival is. It could be something like Epcot Summer Vacation. And they may have offerings that are a little bit more seasonally appropriate, because I would find it hard to believe that they're just going to leave those booths empty for 3 months, especially over one of the busiest times of the year. I think for people that are coming in, for the once in a lifetime people, now that they've made all of these festival booths permanent and they're not rollaways the way that they used to, I think somebody that's going to go to Epcot with no prior knowledge of what this was is going to go, and I'm thinking about, you know, Sal and Gina Marie from Bayshore. They're going to come in and go, what the Epcot, spent $150, half the stuff's closed. I don't see them not utilizing that space for something, but I think they'll make it seasonally appealing.
And to that point, they are putting a lot of effort with the Epcot revamp into having a festival pavilion. You might be onto something there.
I might be. But I'm sure we're going to find out sooner rather than later. And I think D23 Expo is the perfect opportunity to announce that. If they try to shoehorn something in now, I just don't think it's going to work very well.
Although now would really be the best time, because you've got Tiana's Bayou opening in the summer. So it would be a good way to draw people out of the kingdom. And I mean, it's not going to decrease the wait times. any less. It's just not, but it would be nice to give them somewhere else to go.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us this and every week on Monoreal Radio. Monoreal Radio will always be free, but there are many ways that you can help support the show. Please give us a rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Join the conversation on social media at Monoreal Radio on all major platforms. Share your favorite episodes with family and friends who may enjoy them. And of course, book your next trip with Jackie. Links to everything can be found at monorealradio.com. We all get one story. Make yours a magical one.
On behalf of Monoreal Radio, we'd like to thank you for joining us. We'll see you at the movies, the stuff dreams are made of.